Unibet. Episode 119. Glenn Hanlon, Head Coach, HCB Südtirol, Alperia.
We formed sort of a leadership group, and I always, wherever I go, I always make sure the leadership group are domestic players. Like it's their country, it's their team. They're invested way more than, like, I've got guys on our team that watched Bolzano play when they were 5 years old. I've got 10 guys here that couldn't even find Bolzano on a map a year ago. Do you know what I'm saying? So they can't be, to me, they can't be part of your leadership group. And I'm not saying that disrespectfully. That's just, it tells me how lucky we are here, how fortunate we are that they've developed some players here that have a real attachment to Bolzano.
Die Tribüne erhebt sich. Und der Hexenkessel kocht. Da bleibt kein Moment, um einmal durchzuatmen. Bring it on. Mit dem Torhänder! Abgefälscht und die Scheibe im Tor. Aus dem Nichts. Wie schön war das gemacht?
Unibet Hockey. O'Clock. It couldn't happen at a better time of the season. The regular season has just finished and his team led the standings at the very end. He qualified for Champions Hockey League already. He's got now 9 days worth of rest. He is Glenn Hanlon. He is the head coach of Bolzano and is now on Unibet Hockey O'Clock. Coach, grateful to finally have you on the program.
Martin, it's a privilege. And when it comes to hockey in Austria, you've got it nailed and dialed in. So to be on the top show, it's an honor for me. And again, it's always nice to spread the word about this great game and talk about hockey in different countries and sharing thoughts and opinion has always been fun. And it's likely the most intriguing point for me why I have pursued an international career and other than just trying to stick around North America and coaching and living inside that North American box.
Coach, you're staying true to your role and to your image, and I normally don't do this, and I got you to agree into it, to cite from an email that you sent me. The way this works, or how this normally works, is that I do approach the press officials of each and every club if I want to interview a protagonist from a club. He or she gets back, yes, this is the contact information for player so-and-so or the head coach. And then we started mailing back and forth. And we finally came to an agreement that Monday afternoon would be our interview appointment. And you finished your last email to me, and I want to quote this directly by writing, "I'm super excited to talk to you and spread the good word about hockey. Let's make it a special 60 minutes." And I loved how you ended it by writing, "Love hockey, comma, Glenn." Great way to put together an email. When I read it, it kind of felt as someone was preaching to me. In what regard does a head coach have to be a good preacher?
Well, we're ambassadors for the league, and we're ambassadors for hockey all over the world. And I learned at a very early age that from people that were coaches or people that were maybe friends, parents, or my parents for sure. We're a very special, very fortunate to be able to do some things and do the things that we love to do. And for me, it grew mainly once I got out of the NHL. Working in the NHL was a very self-centered existence. It's all about just winning the next game. It's all about survival. It's all about everything to do with going up the ladder and doing whatever it takes to make the next step. And when I got out of that environment and started working in international programs and working in countries like Belarus, that you understand that you have a real commitment to the game of hockey to help help grow this game wherever you go and every breath that you take when you're representing your teams or representing your country, that you want to make sure. So you start spending some more time in grassroots. You start spending time with minor league coaches or minor hockey coaches, and you spend time with professional coaches in every country. And you run into a lot of great people, a lot of different things. And I've really realized for me, I enjoyed going up to Norway in a friendly tournament at Christmas and seeing Norway at Christmas time and just sitting in that rink and watching some really unique systems and coaching of younger players and developing younger players in Norway, as I did watching a practice in the Montreal Forum or all the rinks that we were playing in North America. So I knew that was the calling, and that's why I keep on making sure that everyone else, that I can spread that word to everyone that I come in contact. And here I am. Who would have ever thought that I'm going to come from a little city of 35,000 people in Brandon, Manitoba, and I'm doing a podcast with an Austrian in the middle of sitting in the middle of the Dolomites here in Italy. I mean, it's really mind-boggling. So I want to make sure that I'm appreciative.
Hockey life indeed has got interesting ways of turning out. And glad that you've already touched a little bit about on the business, sometimes the cruel business that is the National Hockey League. I, of course, want to get to that eventually as well. But I want to start with the here and now. As already stated, we record this one day after the conclusion of the Ice Hockey League regular season, a regular season that brought tremendous success again to Bolzano's hockey program. You won 37 out of 48 games at a remarkable 78% winning rate. If I told you right before the season, look, coach, you're going to lead the standings at the end of the regular season, you're going to qualify for the Champions Hockey League, and you're going to win more than three quarters of your games, what would you have said to me in August?
Well, I can tell you almost the exact date why I'm laughing, because I said it last night in the dressing room. Our very final exhibition game, we got absolutely smoked 6-0 by Pustertal in our own rink. And I guarantee you there weren't many happy people around Bolzano, myself included. And you were kind of wondering what was in store for us coming down. So to be really honest and forthright with you, I didn't see it in August. The one thing I did see in August from our group was a really close-knit bunch of guys. Like right from we spent 10 days up in a beautiful place called Corvaro, and we stayed in the Army barracks for 10 days. And it really brought our team together. But you can put anybody in a confined area, or any team a confined area, and it's either going to be a fantastic experience if they all get along and you've got a good group of guys and good group of leaders, or it could be just a absolute catastrophe if everybody hated each other or they had nothing to really get along with. So we had after that game, our captain Danny Frank and a couple of the core group of guys that we had then, we had a meeting, and they said, like, look, coach, don't worry about it. Like, we've got this. Like, we've got it covered. Don't worry about this game as much as it was not what we wanted. There's some great things that are going on here that you don't see in terms of our team, and we got off to a good start.
Was that the switch that kind of flipped, or was it something else that led to the good start? I mean, right out of the gate, you won four in a row. Seven out of the first eight, according to the Unibet stats. So you basically led the standings from the get-go, basically told everybody in and around the league, Bolzano is a force to be reckoned with again. But where did that flip of the switch exactly happen?
Well, it was a... The first four games, it was a bit of a risky situation for us as coaches. I don't know how it works for scheduling, if it was by design and we wanted to play that. But we played the first four games at home. So when you're when you're playing, what is there, 20, about 24 home games or something? You're playing four of them in the first 8 or 9 days or whatever it was, 10 days. It's a big part of your home schedule right away. And if we didn't get off to a good start, we would have really dug a hole for ourselves. And we were fortunate enough. We, I don't want to say fortunate. That's the wrong choice of words. Our players played well enough and hard enough to be rewarded at home. And Bolzano, as we've, as you all know, it's a, there's lots of fans there. They're passionate about hockey. They're knowledgeable about hockey. So we've got a couple wins, and the first four games worked for us, and then just got us some confidence to get going. And then it was just a matter of, you know, we would maybe go 3 or 4 games and our power play would go good, but our penalty kill would be bad and we'd get through it. And maybe we would play poor defensively, but our goalie played well. And then we would, it always seemed one part of our game was just managing to keep us in right through the start of the season. And then we got back, I think we had 10 players from the National, maybe not 10. It was pretty close. Martin, I don't know. We had, but a lot of our players, almost every Italian played in the international break in November, and it was a tough turnaround. They had to get home from Fehavar. They played 3 games in 3 nights. They got home, they traveled all day, and then the next morning we had to get on the bus and go to Vilac. And that game was a really tough game for us, and we were beat and tired. And then we had a little bit of a down stretch right in there, but after we got our got it back on the rails again and managed to play well enough to win some games.
When taking into account all these difficulties and all these ups and downs, and naturally each and every team faces them individually during a long season, how big of an accomplishment, and maybe I have to back this up a little bit, because 11 years ago when the Black Wings Linz went on a magic carpet ride to their second team title or organizational title, Rob Daum, first year head coach back then, his mantra was never lose more than 2 games in a row. And he kind of backed it up. I think they only lost 3 games in a row once. Now, you, with all the difficulties that you had to go through, the longest losing streak, according to the Unibet stats, are the Bolzano season 22-23, 2 games. How proud does that make you of your team when hearing that?
Yeah, I'm proud of our team for lots of different reasons. I'm proud of them because they're good guys. Like that's, I've learned, like, I've done this enough. I hate getting old. I don't really enjoy it, but it has given me a certain perspective on the game. I don't have a lot of mantras. I don't have a lot of rules. We don't have a lot of, you know, I respect everyone that uses or say, like, well, we can't lose 2 games. Or, well, what happens if you do lose 2 games? Like, say you play 2 teams and their goalie stops 50 shots each game and you lose 2 in a row. What are you going to do? Blow it up and reset? So, you know, I just kind of ask our guys to try to get a little better every game. And, you know, we're going to show you some video after games, and maybe we can find an area the next night that we can improve on. And in the end, I've really realized you have players that are hockey players, or you have players that play hockey. And we have a lot of hockey players. Like, they love the game. I don't worry about them. I don't worry about the team getting prepared. I don't do a lot of things because we've got some real winners in our room. And all of these things, you're asking me now 2 games after the season, well, so many things can happen in playoffs and things can change. I'm just commenting entirely on when this interview is taken and what has happened so far. And for me, it's about having players in that room that really love to play and play for each other. And they just like coming to the rink. And that's, we just sort of leave it at that.
Good thing is, in this interview will already be out this upcoming Wednesday. So another 6 days to go until the Foxes finally hit the playoff ice. But as you've already talked about, one interesting person, namely Daniel Frank, the new captain of Bolzano. And we as broadcasters, or me as a Pulse 24 member, we were already successful in kind of rating the Foxes last year after Anton Bernard's retirement. One of the iconic captains Bolzano has had in recent years. He jumped onto our program and he's now a pundit and he'll also work the playoffs. So maybe he's going to see his old team again. But having to lose one's longtime captain, and I know Bolzano had to go through it after Alexander Egger's retirement, who's still connected to the club, obviously. But how did you try to fill that leadership void? And I know there's no Anton Bernard or no next Anton Bernard, but when you got there, it was kind of like a clean canvas. So how did you approach it in terms of forming a leadership council and coming up with a new captain?
Well, I wasn't part of the process, so which is the right way to do it. Like, I don't know the players. The one thing about coaching in Europe is there's so much movement in coaches and moving around, and players move around so much. Like, they try to have good years, and if they can go up in a, you know, contracts are usually 1 year. They're not 4 years trying to develop players. So I didn't know. I wouldn't have enough information on who would have been a good captain. So our ownership or management group there had talked about Frankie, and I really relied a lot on Fabio Armani. Fabio is just a wonderful, wonderful person, first and foremost, but just been just a great wealth of knowledge as my colleague and partner here in coaching. He's not an assistant coach to me. He's a head coach in my eyes here. And he just said it's clear and simple that Frankie's the guy. And it didn't take very long for me to figure out why. And it was just a pretty easy choice. Now, with that, when we form a we formed sort of a leadership group, and I always, wherever I go, I always make sure the leadership group are domestic players. Like, it's their country, it's their team. They're invested way more than, like, I've got guys on our team that watched Bolzano play when they were 5 years old. I've got 10 guys here that couldn't even find Bolzano on a map a year ago. Do you know what I'm saying? So they can't be, to me, they can't be part of your leadership group. And I'm not saying that disrespectfully. That's just, it tells me how lucky we are here, how fortunate we are that they've developed some players here that have a real attachment to Bolzano. And we also have some Italian Canadians here that have celebrated 200 games, 400 games. So this is sort of a bit of an anomaly in European hockey, where you've got five or six guys that are all having these 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 year careers in one city. So for me, our leadership group were our domestic players. And then we have a couple of real leaders, real strong individuals here that almost immediately I knew would be part of, and that they help out a lot.
When it gets to putting the team together, you already said a lot of work had already been done once you got to Bolzano. How did you get to Bolzano? Because last time a lot of viewers on our station, Pulse 24, saw you was when you were ousted after 4 games against the eventual champion Red Bull Salzburg in last year's quarterfinals, you being the head coach of Alice Neumann, which are unfortunately not part of the league anymore. But how did that jump go from Snoimo to Bolzano?
Mm-hmm. Martin, I'm not too sure what happened behind the scenes. Last year was really disappointing. Zanoimo was a great spot. Pavel does a great job there, the owners, and I really enjoyed my time there. It was kind of a real neat city. It was so full of history and just such a learning process. And I always wanted to just go see a city and live and work in a city in Czech Republic to see how they develop skill and how they develop players and things like that. So when the opportunity came out, I really enjoyed it. And we had a real good crew of guys there, and they played really hard, and it was a fun year. I was disappointed. I understand the decision to go back to the Czech league, but so I wasn't working, and I, you know, the great thing again, as I go through life and hockey here, if I was 40 years old and out of work and not knowing what I was doing, and my son was a baby and all of these extra pressures on you, I would be going, wow, you know, crazy. What am I going to do? Or how am I going to do this? And now I'm at a stage in my life. My wife's got a good job. I'm happy, whatever comes my way, and I'm not forcing situations. And I got a phone call maybe 2 or 3 weeks later. I don't know the exact time frame. From Bolzano here, and my wife and I talked it over real quickly, and we just, you know, I know from coming to, I didn't come to Bolzano, I wasn't here, we didn't go to Bolzano, but I'd been to Pustertal and seen the valley and seen the area and stuff like that, and you know, talking with people, it was a no-brainer for me to come here. So it's been great.
And there's great food.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, very true.
When we look at Bolzano, we've known that for quite some time. Two things from the outside looking in that always come up again. Bolzano has a knack for getting really good import players, like first time in Europe players. And the president, Mr. Knoll, seems to be one of the more hands-on presidents in the league. How far would you agree with those two statements? How does it look from the inside?
Oh, you're 100%. Yeah, 100%. You know, there's like the one thing about hockey, like you can't, no matter what, you can't as a coach. Almost what I've come to realize, it's as important, maybe even more important. I don't know how you judge it, but and I learned this from a guy called named Doug Shedd, and Doug has worked in the DEL. He's worked in Finland. He's worked many. He's been all over. We used to play together, and Doug told me very early as I was getting, it was just my first year, I took over Jokerit when he was leaving to go to, I'm not sure if he's going to Switzerland or going to the KHL. I can't remember. It was quite a few years ago. But, you know, he told me, Glenn, he says, over here, it's recruiting is as important as knowing what breakout you're going to use and be able to get the players. And you can't sign good players without having the resources. Like you need to have, your club needs to have the money to be able to sign these players. That doesn't mean you're not going to make mistakes. And but for us, and again, I don't want to sit on a podcast and say it's all coaching and all of that. It's not. It's about being able to have resources, being able to have a good facility, being able to have a city that families want to go there. Sometimes you've got three children that are all going to school, and you don't have an international school for English-speaking people, or however it is. I mean, there's so many things that go into that. So we're pretty lucky here. I keep using the word lucky. It's not like things they have the resources here to bring in the players. So once that happens, then you have to make sure you make the right decisions to do that. And I've been in a lot of leagues, and Dr. Knoll is involved in our day-to-day operation. He helps right from day one, from the signing. Doesn't, you know, he'll have a list of players, but it's not like, okay, you got to have this player, or you got to play this player, or this line has to be this, or at a certain time I want this player on your power play. But He's been in this business a long time, and he knows the league, and he knows, you know, things about travel, and he knows things about that. And everywhere I've gone, from the Washington Capitals to the being a manager in the Western Hockey League in junior in Vancouver, every person that owns a hockey club wants to be involved. It's a big investment, and they should be. And if a coach thinks that any coach in this world just walks into a room and has absolutely nobody that he is accountable to, I think you need to shake your head. I mean, it's a big investment for all these people, and they want to make sure it's done right. And they want to see, lots of times it falls in line with how they're thinking. And that's the way it should be. So I have no problem with that.
When we talk about team construction, we all know there's a great Italian core that Bolzano's already had. Mike Helmo and Dustin Gaisley can probably already be counted towards that Italian core. But when you try to fill the voids, and you got to Bolzano, obviously a couple of weeks after the season with Snoimo ended, and we all know that this is a process that might start early in the year already. How much of it was in place? How much or to what degree were you able to shape the direction that we are going in terms of people that you wanted to bring in? And I don't know, it's about budgets and if it's a good fit for the player, and there's so many different factors in that equation, but what kind of people were you looking for? What kind of players were you looking for that we were able to bring in that shaped this program and this Bolzano Foxes team of the 22-23 season?
Yeah, it's a very interesting question. So, Jorg Knoll, Dr. Knoll's son, is younger, and he's more in tune with players, and he's been talking to agents and that for these past years. And for an example here, I'll get maybe to the point of the question, but I think by just telling, we have a guy, Scott Valentine. Well, Scott played 4 or 5 years in the DEL. Well, Jorg tried to sign him 5 years ago. So he's a player when we were talking about, like, he has references that I don't have. So what we did is we just built a ghost roster on what I kind of look for at each position. I made it really clear that I wanted, that sounds demanding. It's not, my preference is to have 4 lines, 6 defense that we can just play, just roll over and just keep on playing these players. So I more or less said, I'm not telling you what your budget is. That's your guys' business. But what I would do is just put it down on a sheet of paper, figure out how much you're going to spend on goalies, how much you're going to spend on defense, how much you're going to spend at forward positions, and then divvy it up how you see fit. And I said, if there is a choice of having one really, really high expensive player and one really low player, I would rather kind of even it out so that I've got four players in every position. It's not that simple, Martin, but I think the essence of it is you get what I'm saying. So once I sort of stated that, then I just asked Jorg to fill out his depth chart on where he sees these players, not for us, but where he sees them in the league. Like, where do you see Dustin Gaisley? Is he a top 6 player? Is he a top 1 player? Is he a 10? You know what I'm saying? I know where he is now. He certainly is a very, very good player. But so they just sort of put these players in, not making lines. I said, I don't want to make lines or anything. I said, just sort of do that. And I said, at the very, very end, I said, I just want really good people. I want good people. And maybe I was just being selfish and lazy, and I didn't want to deal with a bunch of problems. I didn't want to deal with a bunch of personalities and all of that stuff. So I just said, look, if you call and you know your players, if they're really the ones that you've had for like Angelo Michelli, and you've already talked about Gaiser, and you've talked about Helmo, and you've talked about all these guys. I said, if they're really good guys, bring them back. I said, if you sort of go, I don't know, I'm not, then don't bring them back. And every single one of them was just, yeah, they're really good guys. And I said, when we sign people, when you do your, you know, your investigation and you're talking to people and somebody says, yeah, you know what? He's so okay. But you know what? He scored 30 goals and, you know, we overlooked a lot of things. But in the end, he was really good. I said, I don't want that player. I said, we're not going to win with that player. And I just said, get really good people and then try to get the people that can skate. And that's the hardest one. And, you know, it's the hardest one to judge because you can't, we have programs, video programs that we can watch players play, but it's really tough. Sometimes the camera's not great on some of the leagues you're looking at. And, you know, it's really hard to tell a good skater from a bad, not a bad skater, but you know what I'm saying? But if you can get enough people saying, yeah, you know what, he's a pretty good skater, then, and then after that, I said, that doesn't matter. Like we're not the NHL. We can't say, well, I want a great person. He has to have a great shot. He has to have high hockey IQ. He has to be big. When they have seven or eight of these qualities, well, they're making $9-10 million a year. So, you know, the next layer is going to be, say, what's the next highest league? I guess you're looking at the KHL or you're looking at Switzerland. You can have the criteria can be a little bit bigger, a little longer. And it's no different with coaches. I mean, I've got a lot of warts too. So I'm just saying this is kind of what it is. I couldn't have a litany of things that of 10 long or else I'd be playing for the Washington Capitals or the Vancouver Canucks. So I wanted really good people that could skate and we'll do the rest.
Kind of taking away my next question, because if it really is dead even with two players that you're looking at, like from a salary standpoint, from everything that they're looking for, from their roles, from what you're looking for, if they're great in terms of their character, it's the skating that's the deciding factor, or the other things that you might pull into account to make a decision?
I just feel good people first. We spend so much time together, Martin. Like, if you look at it, we're at the rink every day at 9, we leave at 12, or we're there at 10 and leave at 2, or whatever it is. We do that. We go on a bus to Fehvar for 7 hours. We're together. And I don't know. I've heard guys say, oh, well, we won and we didn't like each other. I don't know how that happens. You must be really, really good. Like, you must have so many good players that you could win no matter what. I just want our players to have a real good experience. And I just feel that, and maybe you're catching me on a day where I've just been blessed with 23 really, really good guys. Like, you, I know, maybe part of it's like, I've tried everything that I'm saying now, I've tried in other times, and doesn't always work out. And, you know, the hockey gods were there, or, you know, for whatever reason, it's worked out. And I just think good people aren't going to let you down. And our guys haven't let me down. I mean, we're talking about in practice, we're talking about everything. So, you know, it's been reinforced in my mind that there has been times where I've sort of bend my attitude a bit and say, oh, well, this person's kind of selfish. I'll work and I'll help them or I'll do that. But boy, in the end, it's a lot of work. You know, and that old saying sometimes is that you spend 90% of your time with 5% of your players. That's not the case with us, because I don't have 5% bad apples in our room here. So we've been able to sort of divvy up the attention to everyone. And you know what, too? You know, there's a lot of things that go on behind the scenes that keep everybody in check. Like, there's your leadership group again coming forward and eliminating. I've had a couple of times where we've had some bad periods and I go to walk in you know, I've had one of the leadership guys, don't worry, I've got this. Like, we've got this here. You don't have to worry about it, coach. We're okay here. We've got it. So, I mean, maybe they go in there and all laugh and say, hey, you get rid of the coach next time we play bad. This time it's my turn. But he's senile and old and he can't figure it out. So you know, we'll just cut him off at the path. So, but he's, but that's, yeah, again, I, you know, I've got a guy here, Mike Delhuesen. He, winning follows that guy. Like he's like, we're playing a game. It's about our second or third exhibition game. And we're playing, this is kind of like, cause we have three farm teams. So I think part of the deal is that we would play exhibition games with these. We played one in Gardena, one in Interland, and we played one other one. Oh, Murano. Yeah. That's where we played it. So anyway, like we're playing against Alps League teams and Mike's like, and this is like August the 15th or something. And it's like a playoff game intensity for this guy. So, you know, he brings that every single day. And again, I mentioned guy Scott Valentine. He's just a real, real leader. Like I've been fortunate enough to be around some really good players and good leaders, but these guys are, they don't take a back seat to anybody in their approach to the game and how they manage people and manage their teammates and how they come to practice. And, you know, we've had some bad practices, and before I even say anything, guys are just taking guys aside and making sure that they get their act together. So maybe as I'm talking about how everything is, maybe it, again, like you said, it should be maybe more recognition of your leadership group behind the scenes.
But when we look at a season that Bolzano just had, and I know everything can change with maybe an ousting in the quarters or the semis, which would deem everything that has happened so far maybe kind of a failure. But as of right now, tremendous season. You were right around the standings or at the top of the standings for most of the year. You deserve to be the team that eventually makes the first pick of its playoff opponent in a couple of days, and I want to get to that as well. Again, from the outside looking in, it seems as the entire year was kind of smooth sailing. But from the inside, I know there had to be moments where you thought this can't be, or moments where things just didn't mesh like you want them to be. What was one of those moments, if you might allude to it, where you thought, okay, this is someone no one on the outside ever sees, but this is really dark or bad or shouldn't be, that you then again try to use to correct the course?
Yeah, you know, all of these answers are all directed at the previous 7 or 8 months or however long since October or August the 10th. I'm smart enough to know the season's all about, I mean, when you watch Daryl Sutter being interviewed in Calgary, he's like, I don't even know if he would come on today to talk about the first 48 games. Like
he'd hate me questioning him. Like,
it's not winning is not winning, you know, first place and these things is nothing to like nothing. It's all about winning the Stanley Cup. And I really get that attitude, but I don't want to invest 7 months of, like, these players have invested for 7 months and at least have some sort of recognition for what great guys they are. Now, that doesn't mean we're sitting here thinking that the season's over. It doesn't mean that we're fully aware our game isn't where it needs to be the winner. I mean, there's teams that, you know, we played VLAC, they beat us 3 or 4 times. Like we one game, we didn't even touch the puck, for crying out loud. And, you know, Salzburg, we won last night with 2 minutes left and they left 4 or 5 of their top players at home. So like we have a long way to go. But we understand that and we respect every opponent. I mean, I've drilled that into them. I mean, you don't want, you know, the old saying, you don't fear anyone, but you certainly respect everyone and everything. So, you know, the first part of that question is that these things have nothing to do with what we're going to face and the amount of intensity and the improved play and what we have to do and how we have to find a way to even reach another level in these next 9 days, because it's going to get pretty smoking in this once we get going here. So in our first opponent. So, that's kind of the part that we look at. I don't, I don't want to project anything. I don't want to look at things as failures or as successes. We just, again, it gets back. I mentioned it earlier, and we're kind of like, okay, we got to play game 49 here, and we got to be better than we were in game 48. And when we play 49, we got to be better in 50, because no matter what happens in that game, there's going to be a smart coach trying to push the limits to find a way to make us better. And that's kind of where we're, that's our approach to it. And, you know, it's a podcast for an hour. In my communications course, they said your answer should be 15 seconds, because that's all they give you on TV and radio. So if you give a 5-minute answer, they're going to edit it for 15 seconds. So I don't know if all this gets in, but, you know, we'll let you get back to your question now.
No worries. This is why I came up with the podcast, because I hated these post-game or pre-game snippets that were entirely the same. You basically could do them once a year and let media people just reuse them for the entirety of the year. And this is where we do dig a little deeper. And that's the beauty of the podcast. And I do think we'll get to the hour. And even if your next answer is going to be a 20-minute answer, love listening to you. Very enlightening. But if you don't mind, I'd ask, or I've got one or two more questions for you prepared.
Great.
So refrain from those 15 seconds at the very least on this program. The one question that still's kind of stuck with me when looking at the Bolzano roster, and we've already talked about the core and the players that have been here. But from all the new players that you brought in, maybe not even the first time in Europe players, but the players that play in this league for the first time, who kind of impressed you the most? And I know name dropping is something coaches hate or circling out players, but is there still anyone whose development, whose journey you kind of found interesting or exciting? And of course, this is a set of questions. There's more to it, because I want to talk about a specific player. But is this someone that kind of stands out for you?
Well, I think right away, I mean, Sam Harvey, like, you're bringing in a goalie that is, I think he had two years of pro experience. Kind of East Coast League, American League, up and down. And it's a big adjustment. Like, people don't understand in North America how big of an adjustment it is to come and play in the bigger ice surface. And I always wondered, as a ex-goaltender, I'd never played on an international sheet of hockey, I always wondered if it would be any different or whatever. So when we signed Sammy was one of our last signings. I think one of the reasons we were more selective is we had Andy Bernard that we felt is a number one goalie in this league. And so it gave us that luxury of not panicking and doing something. So I don't even think he didn't even start training camp with us by the time he got there. So we knew that he had a history. He had won a CIS Canadian championship, and he had won a Quebec League junior championship, played in the Memorial Cup. He could have won the Memorial Cup too. I should have known that. Sorry, Sammy, if you're listening to this, that's disrespectful. But winning had followed him, so that was important. And he came in right away, and just, he's got a really cool attitude, like, for a goaltender. He's just loves playing, loves stopping pucks. Every day, optional, whatever it is, he's in there doing his stuff. And he's a real outgoing guy. Like, a lot of goalies, myself included, were sort of, like, especially days of games, just very introverted and like, okay, just stay away from me. Like, just, we got this big cone of silence around me, and I'm walking through everywhere I go and don't want to bump into anyone. And Sam is like, you know, totally the opposite. So he's been a really, answer your question, he'd be the one that would pop to my mind.
I was kind of looking at it myself. You were exactly right. 2 years of pro experience, played 14 games in the American Hockey League, 41 in the East Coast Hockey League. Incidentally, 2 shutouts in 14 games in the AHL, 3 shutouts in 41 in the East Coast Hockey League. So fairly impressive in that regard. But what's even more impressive is if we look at the Unibet stats, he played 34 games in the regular season. He won 28. And going back to the middle of December, his last 17 games, only one loss. And that came in a game against Villach in February. Truly remarkable for a 25-year-old to do that. Now, you as a former goaltender and probably takes one to no one, what's the recipe to Sam Harvey's success?
I think he can handle adversity. I think like when he lets a goal in that he thinks he can have, he'll come to the bench between, hey, that one's on me. Sorry, guys. You know what I mean? Like it doesn't bother him. And I've seen him and we've talked about, I have no clue, honestly. Well, I'm not trying to be funny or anything. I have no clue about teaching goaltenders now, or I don't even know the terminology. I wouldn't have the faintest idea. But the one thing that hasn't changed from 1910 to 1920 to 1999 to 2023 is that there's a mental side of sports and there's a mental side to each position. I don't know what it's like to go into a face-off circle with 10 seconds left when you have to win it, but I know how to face the pressures of standing in goal when there's a minute left and you're facing a power play, or you're, you've had 3 goals scored on you in the first period, and some goalies kind of pack it in and say, well, tonight's not my night. And other goalies are going to dig down deep and find a way to win a hockey game 5-4 and not worry about it. And I think that's what I like about, Sammy. I mean, it's just, he just goes out and plays. And I think that just comes from loving the game and loving the moment. And doesn't seem to bother him. I don't know how he feels inside, but outwardly it just seems like, oh, well, I've got 40 more minutes to be in my sandbox here, and I'm going to go out and enjoy it and see what happens. So.
When we look at the teams that made the playoffs and the teams that made the pre-playoffs, a common factor is that a lot of them are coached by former goaltenders. It's Bozzano, coached by you. It's Innsbruck, coached by Mitch O'Keefe. It is Fehrbach, coached by Kevin Constantine. It's Asiago, coached by Tom Barrasso. Why is it all goaltenders that tend to bring success to those programs?
Maybe we're bad with our money and we still needed to work after our careers. I don't know. I don't know if the position brings that. You know what? I don't know each one of them well enough to comment on why they do it or what drove them to do it. I do know they're all unique individuals from the time I do know. I mean, when you talk about what Kevin did in his career, it's phenomenal. What he did last year in Fayavar and is doing, we'll do it again here. Starting next week is getting there. Starting tomorrow is get into this pre-playoff. You know, Tommy's been, of all of us, I was saying we had a little pre-season get-together, and we were all in the room there together with the coaches, and we had the poker tournament and everything. So there was Tommy and I in the room, and someone asked, they said, well, I said, you've got 2 goalies in the NHL, from the NHL in this league, and we're averaging 1 Stanley Cup apiece. And the guy looked at me, goes, did you win a Stanley Cup? I said, no, but Tommy won 2. So that at least it averages out. Of all of those guys, they're all unique, and Mitch has done just, I just love the way their team plays and his demeanor. And I know a couple of players in the team, they just love him to death. And they're all unique guys, and they've done a good job. So, I don't know.
It definitely is interesting because if you go back to the poker tournament,
there's more commentators. There are more commentators, Martin. Like, I mean, you look in the NHL at how many color commentators are on individual NHL teams or doing national broadcasts. There's a lot of goalies are ended up getting into the broadcasting business, which is more neat.
Same on the Pulse team. We got 5 pundits and 2 of them are former goaltenders, so not too bad, I guess, on our part. But going back to the poker tournament, I mean, you got all those former goaltenders, NHL goaltenders, NHL head coaches, and you're sitting across from Mark Hapshot, whom you played with in Detroit, or Dave Barr, whom you played with in Detroit. Is that kind of the ultimate proof how small Planet Hockey really is?
Oh, yeah, you nailed it. Like, you nailed it. And Martin, we talk about that. Like, you know, I was sitting there with Barzi and Javi. We're going, like, what are the chances we were going to, like, you know, you talk about, I think one of the questions earlier is if somebody asked you at the start of the season, do you think, or at the end of the exhibit, do you think, well, what are the chances of our team in Detroit, like, how many years later that would be? 30, whatever, I can't, it would be in the 80s or late or early 90s, I think. So 3 guys on one team all coaching in the same league, that's pretty good in Europe, in Austria. So but you know what that does, though? I think that speaks, when I think about it, I mean, that speaks volumes for the league. Like, I mean, the managements of the league have done a really good job of making it professional. The cities do a really good job. All the cities are great. It's the hockey is very exciting, and it's really entertaining hockey. So, you know, there's a culture. There's sort of an underground network of coaches, like you're talking about. Well, you were in this league, or what's it like? And there's all these questions. And you know, the league here, the Ice Hockey League, gets a really good review from the coaches, both the players and the imports that you bring in, and these types of things. So maybe it isn't that. Off the charts that we would all end up in this league.
As we've already started to talk a little bit about the National Hockey League, one question that has to come up, I'm sure you can't hear it anymore, so I'm rephrase it a little bit. How often have you had to talk about that one goal that you had to concede to a person whose very first NHL goal it was?
I'll tell you what. It was a funny one, because I know this is going to sound like BS, but I didn't even really remember that I gave up this first goal. Like, it wasn't something, and that certainly as a goalie, I mean, you play 14 years in the NHL and you're famous for one thing, giving up goals. Like, that doesn't say much about your career. But before I get into Gretzky's goal, I'm going to tell you a funny story that's way more, I don't think it's funny, but maybe you might think it's funny. So there's a player, Mike Gartner, and you'd have to look at the stats but they're all century goals. So I know for sure, like, he scored his 100th goal on me. And then next time we're playing, I see in the press notes, okay, Mike Gartner's going for his 200th goal. So boom, now he gets his 200th goal. And then he gets like his 300th goal on me. And now I got to look at how many, I think he ended up with 6. So I don't know exactly the hundreds, but he gets, and now we're about to play this game, and he's either going for his 400th or 500th goal, whatever it is. And I'm just sitting there and I'm saying, like, if this guy scores, Mike's the nicest guy in the world. I said, if this guy scores this goal on me, I says, I'm throwing the puck over the glass. I said, I don't care if it's a penalty. I don't care, but he's not getting the puck. So anyway, sure enough, he scores the goal. And my friend was on Washington, Ryan Walter. So he goes, get the puck, and I take it out of his hand. I'm wrestling it out of his hand. I say, well, I'm throwing this thing over the glass. I say, Gartz isn't getting this puck. And he's got a bear hug on me, so he won't throw it over. So anyway, now, fast forward, he's going for another. He's playing in Phoenix. And I'm the assistant coach in Vancouver. And he's going, again, I don't have the numbers exactly in front of me, but he's going for either his 500th or his 600th goal. And I'm behind the bench. So Gartz is skating around before the game, and he goes, hey, Glenn, you wouldn't happen to have your equipment back there, do you? I've been struggling to get this 600 goal. So anyway, back to Gretzky. I know you'd think, you know, now that I've been reminded a million times and every time I'm introduced to, it's not what I've won or lost or played. It's I gave up the first goal. I said, I didn't give it up. He scored on me for crying out loud. But anyway, I'm coaching and we're away and I come back. And that's in this olden days, maybe you're too young to remember, but there used to be answering machines with the red light blinking. So I get home from a road trip and there's like about 50 messages. And I'm going, what the heck? And then so it's, first one's like, I'm a reporter, some from like South Carolina or something like that. Says, I just want to talk to you about Wayne Gretzky's first goal. And I'm like, screw you. Like, I'm not talking to you about that. And then the next one was like, I'm from, I don't know, someplace. So what had happened, I guess, either Sports Illustrated or Sports, when they were going to do a story on Gretzky's breaking Gordie Howe's record. So they sent out a list of questions that, or points of reference, I guess, for the story that these people could, if you're going to write in these different things, what you could be looking at. And I guess one of them was me giving up the goal. So they phoned our team and got all this stuff. So about the first seven or eight, I'm like, I didn't realize this until, you know, after the fact. But then finally I said, well, I can't be the, we'll talk about it then. So no problem. But I've never seen Gretz. I've never seen him to talk about. I've never, ever seen him because before that, I didn't even really think about giving up his first goal. I mean,
he owes you, right?
You're talking about 19. Like when he scored his goal, he was like 12 years old. And like, you know, I'm kidding. I mean, he was like 18, I think, in the league. And it was about his fifth game. We didn't know, you know, we knew he was going to be a good player, but we didn't know he was going to be the greatest player of all time. You know what I mean? So it wasn't like, when he scored on me, I'm sitting there going, wow, I'm going to be in the record books here. And that's pretty cool. But so it wasn't.
So if for whatever reason, Wayne Gretzky listens to this, you still owe Glenn Henlon at the very least a call, please do so.
Well, I'd take a beer before I'd take a phone call, to be honest.
Even better. Hopefully he listens to it. And two more things to broaden the hockey horizons of the listeners here. Mike Gardner, of course, among other things, Washington Capital, great. He's still a record holder for most consecutive 30-goal seasons. He scored 30 goals 15 years in a row. Unbelievably so.
Martin, which is impressive. I mean, Connor McDavid's fast. He wasn't Connor, but Connor McDavid's fast in a very fast hockey league. Mike Gartner was very fast in a considerably slower league. Like he was above and beyond like so many players. He was a great player. And I don't think he ever won a Stanley Cup. And again, it's like kind of all these people say, oh, I always kind of makes me quite angry. You get somebody that's played in the NHL for 15 years or whatever it is and scored 600 goals and they say, oh, he's not a winner or something. Like, are you kidding me? Just because he hasn't won a Stanley Cup or these types of things, not a winner. I mean, holy mackerel. It's, you know, so many things go into winning championships, being lucky and being unlucky sometimes, being traded away from a winning team at the very trade deadline and all of these things. It's, you know, I played with a guy, Dave Lewis. He was in the Butch Goring trade. He played in the Islanders and he got traded to LA just at the trade deadline before they won their first cup. Islanders go on and win whatever, five or four or five. And yeah. And LA didn't win a cup so in his time there, but very good player, a good coach, good guy. So, yeah.
Yeah. Same with Mike Gardner. He was on the Rangers in 94 and got dealt to the Maple Leafs. Well, the Rangers went onto their Stanley Cup run, of course.
Yeah, so I was coaching in Vancouver when we lost. Nate, we hit the post with 4 minutes left. It's the same thing. Played all those years, never won a Stanley Cup. And we hit the post with 4 minutes left. It's amazing how that 4 minutes or who knows what could have happened. It's all, you know, would have tied the game. It wouldn't have won the game. But I mean, does it change your life? Does it change the way like you have to really, you know, the way you look at yourself or how you perceive yourself in your career? These are difficult things. I can say it comfortably now because it's, you know, in the twilight of my career, but it's not something you want to talk about when you're 40 years old, for sure.
When looking at your career, especially in the National Hockey League, you've played with so many greats. I mean, one that does stand out to me, not only everything regarding him as a player, but now as an official and someone who's basically rebuilt two programs from scratch, Steve Yzerman. You were the first pro hockey coach Alexander Ovechkin had in the National Hockey League. Who are the people, the individuals that to this day still stand out for whatever reasons to you that you were able to coach or play with?
Yeah, you know what? You know, the hard part about that question is, Martin, is like so you've been around so many years, you know, you've been around and there's so many, you know, I don't know, there'd have to be 1,000 players, you know what I'm saying? That, so it's easy, the great ones jump out at you just because they're so prevalent and they're still in thing. But with Stevie was a special guy. We came to, I say we, there was about 8 or 9 guys, older veteran players. Detroit had sort of gone the route of signing free agent college players and it didn't work out for them. And they brought in a lot of ex-captains. Like we had, I bet you, well, Dave Lewis was a captain. Mel Bridgman was a captain. If I went through the list, there would be more there that were captains on teams. We had some really good leaders. And Stevie at the time was 22 years old, I think. And Jacques Demers was a coach and he came in and said, we're going to make, he called all of us in, like the older guys that had some years. And he says, we're going to make Stevie the captain. And this was after training camp and we'd only known Stevie for a month or so. And they said, we're going to name him the captain. And, you know, do you want us to wait a year? Do you want one of you guys to be the captain here to give him a year to kind of see all this stuff? And to a person, we were just, this guy's amazing. Like he is amazing. Like just get it done and do it. And he handled us. Like there were so many times, I think I would have been, whatever, I can't remember my exact age at the time, but there'd likely be 10 years difference. And maybe someone like Harold Snepps and these players, there could have been 14 years difference. But I mean, he was a leader, like just a real leader. And we could see it. And a lot of things throughout the course of that year, he really made us look silly on some things, like just on his leadership skills and how he saw it and how we saw it differently, but he was 100% right. So I would have to say he would be it. But there's, you know what, I played, there are so many players there, and you know what, in when you're at that level, there's some real quality people in those groupings, and to name one over the other, really difficult. Brian Sutter, like some of these names, they're not going to resonate with your listening because it's too, that's the hard part. That's the one thing I learned. You can't use examples of players that I played with and for greatness or things like you know, there's players, I bet you there's players in our room don't even know Mark Messier or these types of players. You know what I mean? It's hard for us as hockey people if I say, you know what, Messier was a great leader, they're like, well, who's Mark Messier? And that's kind of sad. So, but I would have to say Stevie would be one of the ones for sure that stood out.
But you see, I do think I've got a very educated audience, and please keep name dropping because a lot of them
don't back up. I'm not questioning their
education. I know.
I'm questioning their age. Their age.
but keep on name dropping, and I'm sure they'll look it up, as it's easier than ever before to not only look up the player but also see some highlights of a player's career.
Yeah, well, we had, you know, the things when I go through the players that you play with, there's so many leaders that just did it in different ways. Like some guys were leaders off the ice, some guys were great, some guys were funny and they kept the room loose and that was their role for leadership. Some guys just worked so hard in practice, and some guys were just maniacs and with intensity. And you know, well, the thing with Stevie is that it looked like he was just going to church. Like he was just so laid back, but he was so fierce and such a competitor. So it really helped me. It helped me to understand that leadership, like as a coach, can come in different ways and different forms. But in the end, like I said, your leaders will come in all different shapes and sizes and attitudes.
Right at the beginning of this conversation, and I want to round this up because I know that you've still got a lot to do, and I've already cost you more than an hour of your valued time.
My family's in Vancouver. I'm happy to talk. I don't use my voice. We got 2 days off right now, and if I wouldn't have spoke on this podcast, I wouldn't have used my voice for 2 days.
Really?
So, yeah. So I'm quite happy to be able to speak.
You know what? I could stretch this to 2 or 3 hours, but I'd rather bring you back on another instance, because I want to separate this into multiple parts. But the one question that I want to come back to, or the one answer from you at the very beginning of this conversation, I want to kind of touch on again, is where you said that the NHL can be a cruel business at times, where it's just about the wins and losses, where it's not about the people, where if someone doesn't perform, there are 5 to 10 players just waiting waiting for their shot at his position. You've played, you've coached, you've been through it all. What were the instances where you felt, okay, this is indeed more about the business than it is about the individuals?
I think I understand the question. Like, I mean, it's great English. I think, well, maybe I'm just trying to think here so I get the right. The one thing, I've worked for two different types of ownerships. I worked for the Griffiths family in Vancouver, and it was a family. I knew every one of the kids. I still am in touch with Arthur Griffiths. He's part of our Canuck alumni. Every New Year's Eve after the game, we would go to their place for a party, a New Year's Eve party. Mr. Griffiths would come down between games or do it, and it was very personal. It felt like you were working, you were part of their family. Same thing when I was in Detroit. And then I've worked for corporations when I was with the Rangers. And there was a corporation, you didn't ever really know who the owner was or any of these things, and it felt like a business. I think that's maybe one example of it. But when it comes down to individual situations, I mean, these guys are very well cared for. I mean, that's the, in the NHL, you're very, and they care about the individual, but I think in the end, I think it's all a business, isn't it? Like if it's, what are you doing for me now? And can you perform? And, it's not a business for the players. Like they don't sit and say, oh, well, I'm going to a business meeting when it's a practice. Like it's still a game. But in the end, it's, you got to perform or your life is not very easy. And that's the price of playing in the best world, best league in the world, and playing for the most money. That's just the way it is. The stakes are high and the rewards are fantastic. I think the biggest thing that I admire about, at least I'm going to separate the coaches from the players now. I really admire the strength and the self-confidence that a coach can have and get fired and 5 days later be on TV and, talk about hockey and that. Like for me, when I got fired in Washington, it was devastating. And I said, I didn't want to do that again. I didn't want to put my family and myself on TSN and ESPN and nationally be criticized and challenged. Like I had no clue what I was doing when I'd invested likely 30, 40 years of learning about hockey. And I just didn't want to do it. And I didn't mean I didn't want to coach hockey, or I just wanted to find another venue or another avenue. And I was lucky enough to find Europe. And again, the pressure here is high. The stakes are high. It's the same, but it's just a little bit different. That's a little bit different.
Probably should have phrased my last question a little different, because it is a performance business, but it can be pretty ruthless. If you as a player don't perform, if you as a coach don't perform, and once seats are, especially head coaching seats, are starting to get warmer and eventually hot, you are the one who's in the news all the time, who's constantly being talked about, obviously made out as someone who doesn't have a clue. How was that stretch for you in Washington when you were all over the news, when rumors swirled around that you might be out in the next days or weeks? How is that feeling?
It was awful. I see coaches. I just went, I really kind of follow because Vancouver, I'm part of the alumni. I've spent a lot of years there. And so I'm really close. So I just went through, kind of watched firsthand with Bruce Boudreaux, who ended up being fired in like a real wild fashion. Like, it was really, really bizarre. And it was like everybody knew he was going to be, like, not rumor, like they knew he was going to be fired. And he was still coaching for 5 or 6 games, and he was talking about it in the media. And he was saying, oh, I just come to work. I don't let it affect me. I don't let it. And I'm saying to myself, either he's amazing, like just really amazing, or he, and you couldn't go on, like, obviously you couldn't go on the radio and say, hey, this is killing me, or doing whatever it is. But anyway, I'm going, because I knew it just kills you inside what's going on, and it kills your family and all of these things. So I think that for all of these coaches, every single one of them, when they go through it, I think, and it's right at the very end, and they know what's coming, like you're one game away, or you're one bad penalty at the end of the game and a power play goal that's going to lose the game. It's really tough, and it's almost like a relief when you are fired. Like, you get to a point where you know, I don't think you're coming out of this. Like, I just don't see a response. It's gone 5, 6, 7, 8 games, and it's getting worse instead of better. And like, you take a look at this year in New Jersey, Lindy Ruff, you know, they were chanting his name and fire him. Next thing you know, he's turned it around and goes on a double digit winning streak. And I think that's amazing in itself there, to keep the, you know, get that team to do that. So it's not easy. Like, if people think, oh, you're getting paid and you can do this, and when you think that everyone wants you removed from a job, before you even walk through the doors, and it doesn't affect that person, it does. Yeah, it really does. But again, you get back on the horse, and it takes a while to get back at it again. I'll tell you, I'll sort of shift gears, but I'll tell you a funny story of my firing. So when I got fired in Washington, it was the first time I'd ever been fired. I'd been coaching for about 14, 15, well, quite about 9 as an assistant and a goalie coach, and then 3 and 4. I'd have to look exactly how many years I'd been coaching. I hadn't been fired, so I'd been pretty lucky. Anyway, when it happened, it really hurt me. And there were some great guys. They said, look, get out of town. The coaches said, don't be watching the games, do all that. Anyway, I was just like, I was devastated. So I couldn't even leave the house. Like, that's like, and I think they're all, everyone's the same. But anyway, finally, after about 5 days, my wife says, well, you get moving. Like, you've got to get over this. So they said, why don't you go pick your son up at school? He was in grade 1. And I'd never been to school, because as a coach, you just never have time to pick your kids up or go at 8 in the morning. I mean, you're at the rink at 6. So anyway, my wife and I had had our family a little later in life. So I think my son was 6 and I was about 44 at the time. I'd never met anybody at the school. So I go up to the front thing to pick my son up, and I'm just coming over getting fired. So the principal comes out, and the lady says, oh, here, who are you looking for? And I go, well, I'm here to pick up Jackson Hanlon. So then the principal yells out, oh, okay, Jackson, your grandfather's here to pick you up. Back into the basement again. Beck, I said, I'm not even, I can handle getting fired, but I can't be handled call my son's grandfather. So,
add insult to injury.
Yeah, add insult to injury. Yeah, for sure. But it's these guys. The coaches' fraternity. You would be. When I was fired in Washington, the rink was about an hour from my home. Before I was even home, John Tortorella had called me to say, you know, the team was rebuilding. You'd been there for 4 years. He just went through a whole thing of things, how he respected what we did or I had done and all of these things. And, you know, John gets this rap from the outside about how he's this certain type of person. There's no better thing. A coach in Florida, Mike Kitchen was his name. He called me almost right after that. He said, Glenn, just get out of town. Just don't be watching your team. And all the players all the good coaches that you had or known or that they're really a supportive group. So it's pretty special.
The Lindy Ruff example that you mentioned is a pretty good one because up until last year, Pulse 24 also did broadcast the games of the NHL, and we on air ourselves were wondering, is Lindy Ruff the right guy for the job? Well, turns out he is. Do you think, or how much time do you think you would have needed to turn things around in Washington? Or was there just no way of turning things around?
Yeah, I think that for me, I think that everybody, this hockey life is about experiences. It's about going through experiences as players. It's maybe being a player that gets called up from the American League and he doesn't handle it properly and he gets sent back down. And, I'd gone through quite a few years as an assistant coach in Vancouver and then 3 years in the American League. But like I said to you, it's the first time that I'd ever been fired. So I'm learning, I'm going through a process for the first time in my life. And if I could go back again and do it, I would have changed a lot of things, Martin, how I would have handled that month going into it. But you don't have that luxury. You don't have that knowledge because you haven't done it. And I think I was, like I said, I think I was 41 or 42 at the time. And, if that happened now, I would change a lot of things and how you go about your when you're in a in a real crisis. And it's about crisis management. And when you haven't gone through a crisis, you don't have the experience to do it. You can read it in a book, but I guarantee you, when you've got the pressures of the NHL and trying to win, reading something in the book, it might help you a bit, but it's not the be all end all. Living it and breathing it is the way to go. So in hindsight, when I left North America, George McPhee said, Glenn, are you sure you want to do that? I said, George, I'm going to Europe and I'm going to Finland. I've got an opportunity there. I'm going to see how it is. And I just went and I just loved it and I didn't ever want to go back. So it's a difficult thing, like I've been traded, being traded, it's not the same as being fired. Like being traded, you might think, well, it's a type of firing. It's not. Someone kind of wants you here. No one's wanting you. No one's waiting for you in the parking lot when you go empty out your office and you've got all your information and you're trying to carry it to the car. Like it's a pretty long walk and you're wondering what's in store for you coming up. But that's all. Like I think Roger Nielsen said it best. He goes, The good coaches get fired 10 times, the bad coaches get fired once. So that's, that's kind of how it is. Like you just get back up on the horse and away you go again, if that's what you want. But this was a better life and I enjoyed seeing the world and seeing different types of hockey wherever we went.
Before we get back to the league action, we just quickly want to hear from our good friends over at Unibet, because Unibet has a special offer for all new customers. It's a 400% welcome bonus. Just use the promo code hockey minus bonus while putting 10 euros into your new account for the first time and receive 40 euros for free. More details, as always, in the show notes of this podcast. And of course, it's Unibet by players for players. And I've already mentioned a couple of the great Unibet stats, not only from your career, but from other NHL greats. careers. When we take a deeper look at the Unibet stats, they also show something about Bolzano this year that's interesting and doesn't necessarily bode well for the upcoming playoffs. You're the second most penalized team in the Ice Hockey League. The second most two-minute minors, the most game misconducts. How do you try on minimizing penalties, or is it just a consequence of the style of play of certain players, or a hard-nosed, tough approach that you want to see your team take that might lead to penalties?
Yeah, I don't mind it. Like, I think that there's we wanted to have a physical style of play. We talk about it. Like, so when we take a look at our players, we have some players that they're not going to be effective. Like, if I told them, I said, look, I don't want you getting involved. I don't want you playing emotionally. I don't want, it's a really hard thing to teach a player or to coach a player. I'm not teaching him, but to manage a player is a better word. That's a better choice of words. To get that player that plays his best when he's right on the line. And that line is a very fine line. It's once you cross it, you're no good for the team. And once you don't reach it, you're not playing with that intensity. You're no good for yourself. You're not any good. No, that's better English. My wife's principal, she'd kill me if I spoke like that. So when I take a look at, we don't want to be that. We don't want to take minor penalties for the sake of just being silly or taking bad minor penalties. We've had different meetings and different talks, and we just say, hey, look, if you're going to take a penalty, you know, make a statement. Like, it's got to be part, you've got to be part of the game in a positive way. So you're putting us in the penalty box here. And if it's for something that's going to leave a lasting impression, if you go in and you get a hit and it's a little overly aggressive, we don't tell players to go in there, but sometimes it happens. Like, if you get 10 hits in a game, maybe one of them is going to be overly aggressive. So I don't know. When you're telling your players, look, finish your checks. Our first player on the forecheck, we want to make sure you finish your checks or do whatever that message is, Martin. I think you know the point that I'm trying to make without just coming right out and saying it. You know, sometimes you got to suffer the consequences, and that's our style of play that I can't change. You know, I can't change Mike Del Hughes, and I can't change Scott Valentine. I can't change Mike Helmo. I don't want to change them. We have a physical team, and there's been some physical teams that have won championships. And when we're playing smartly and we're not taking, we try to eliminate it to three a game, then we're successful. We had a really bad spell somewhere in the middle of the season. If I went through all of our games, we had some misconducts. We had some different things that we talked a lot about. We just can't afford to lose players. We can't afford to lose players to be irrational and just take things into their own hand. I mean, you still have to be responsible for your team. And we had a couple of games where like four penalties in a period, and it cost us the game. Like, you just can't kill four penalties in a period. So in answer to your question, yeah, I want us to be physical. Like, it's hard to find a physical team in this day and age, but I don't want us to be irresponsible, for sure. Like, I would, like we talk about, and I think most coaches do, like when you play against one of your teams that you're coaching, you want the other team to know that they're in a game. You know, there's nothing worse as a coach walking out of a rink and team's just taken 3 points and it was just a cakewalk. So I think physicality, I don't know if that's old school. I want to play fast. I want to play solid defense. But, you know, we talk about eliminating hands. We talk about eliminating hitting at hips and sticks and not letting the player advance. Like, once he's moved the puck, we don't want that player to advance into our zone ahead of them. We never, ever talk about cross-checking or making a statement or taking a penalty. But sometimes physicality gets penalties.
Couple days left until the playoffs do start. Two off days for you, and I'm glad that you've already used your voice for more than than an hour and 20 minutes until you're going to refrain, or obviously going to refrain from it. How do you try to get away from hockey if there is indeed no hockey, or if you try to free your mind?
Oh, I don't, Martin, I don't. I'm comfortable to say, even when I wasn't with a team, I don't think a day goes by where I don't think about hockey or want to talk about hockey or watch it. I love fishing. I love fly fishing. I love camping. I love those things. Love my, you know, with my families doing those different things. But hockey is that. That's why I want to spread the word. I mean, it's still something that I enjoy as much as my hobbies, and it's. I don't want to get away from it. Like, I want to be involved. Like today, I don't know, everyone was away. Fabio, he's here without his family. He went up to Italy to North for a day or something to get away. And he was like, well, don't go to the office. I'm going, well, what am I going to do? Like, seriously, you've seen me dress. I'm not going to go buy clothes. So it's just a good, it's a good life. Like, it's really a good, you know, one of the things that I didn't talk about, like when I worked for a guy, Pat Quinn, when I first started, like I was so lucky. Like there was all different types of coaches I could have worked for. And they were going to leave that first coach that you work for, or management group, they're going to leave a lasting impression on you. It's going to really likely decide how you're going to approach hockey. And I worked for Brian Burke and Pat Quinn. Pat Quinn was the general manager coach with Vancouver at the time. And I asked him one day through a cloud of cigar smoke, because he was always smoking cigars. But I just said, you know what, is there one thing that you can tell me that, you know, it's going to help me in my coaching career? And I thought it'd be something to do about a 1-2-2-4 check or a, you know, something. And he just said, Glenn, he says, treat your players when they have a meeting. When you have, he said, these are the two things he says. He says, when you have a one-on-one meeting with the player, it's your responsibility that that player feels better when he leaves your office than when he came in. And the second one is, he says, I want every player, how I treat them, that if they were going to retire in April and never play a game of hockey again, they can hardly wait till September to turn the TV on to watch the NHL or watch hockey games or to go on the internet. Back then it was read the newspaper about player statistics and those types of things. And those are the two things that he just said. So how can you not love hockey when that's your mentor? You know what I mean? Like when that's your direction that you get when you're so impressionable with that first training camp. Yeah, it was pretty important. And that was in 1992, I think. Yeah. So those 30 two years ago. Things have stood out, and a lot of things I've forgotten, but those two things I'll never forget. And that's the type of man that he was, and that's the type of man that I worked for, and, you know, owe it all to them.
Which way I still preaching or trying to get the good word out on hockey. What's definitely circling your mind, I'd imagine, is the choice that will be made either this upcoming Friday or Sunday when Bolzano is the first team to pick its playoff opponent. Have you already made up your mind, or how does it work on Bolzano? Is it the leadership council? Is it the team? Is it the coaches? Who tries to narrow it down to the one team that's eventually going to be your opponent in the quarters?
Yeah, that's a great question. I don't have the answer for you. Like, honestly, I don't have. I'm guessing back again. I think Dr. Knoll will have a big part of it. I mean, there's, when you look at that, there's all kinds of different reasons, like not all kinds, but I mean, the first one's geography, just the simple things like of the four teams that are left, I'm not picking who's going to win, just so that there's clarity on this statement. It doesn't make any sense to me to ever, and again, so I'm clear, Mark, I'm not saying Fehavar is going to win the first round. I'm just saying, when I look at these four teams, I think it would be absolutely ludicrous to drive 7 hours. And if you had to do that twice, I mean, 7 hours there, 7 hours back, I mean, you're looking at 28 hours on a bus in a 10-day window. I mean, that's not fair to anybody. So I would look at the geography first of all, and then after that, here in Bolzano, I don't know how it works. And honestly, I've only been in the situation where an opponent was picked, and that was last year. That's the first time, and Salzburg picked us. I didn't even realize that's how it worked. So I wish I had a better answer for you and a little more insight to the people that are listening, but just from me, I know how I feel when I drive 7.5 hours on the bus. I don't feel very good. So I'm hoping whatever it is, it's not driving the farthest distance.
Coach, we wanted to get to 60 minutes. We ended up at 1.5 hours. Great talking to you. Great hearing all those stories. Great getting better perspective on everything that went on in Bolzano this year. Really looking forward to having you in the playoffs. Really looking forward to seeing you coach in the playoffs, and hope to have you back on Unibet Hockey O'Clock at some point of time. You know that the championship winning head coach always gets a interview at the end of the season, so maybe it's going to be you.
Well, we've got a lot of work ahead of that, and I don't speak an hour and a half unless I'm engaged with in the conversation. They're great questions, and you know, going into this, Mark, it's a real skill for someone that as a broadcaster to do an interview, to make it just where you're sitting in your room feeling and you're just kind of having a talk and you forget you're even in an interview, and you're just, next thing you know, you're spewing all of these things that you had no idea you were ever going to talk about. And that's what was accomplished here today. And I really appreciate the time that you gave me, and it's been a lot of fun, and hopefully we'll do it again. And the great thing about hockey, like I said, Dave Barr, Mark Abscheid go from the Detroit Red Wings in the 80s to coaching in Austria. We'll never know where we'll end up meeting farther down the road. So,
Coach, I'm blushing.
It's always interesting. Yeah.
I'm blushing. Thank you so much for doing this. All the best to you and your team.
Okay, same. And same to you and your fans and all hockey in this league. Thanks.
Exzellente Unterhaltung mit dem schönsten Sport der Welt. Unibet Hockey O'Clock.